Mr. Farmer. You were saying, Mr. Farmer, that there's a kind of a pure verbalism involved in the competition for control or for the forcing of certain policies.
Yes. Right now, it's easy for a man to become a Negro leader or to be accepted as a Negro leader. If he makes speeches which are militant enough, if he makes speeches which capture the press sufficiently, then he becomes recognized, at least temporarily, as a Negro leader on the basis of pure verbalism, without having any following, without having any organization behind him, and without taking any action. One example of that, incidentally, is Malcolm X. Malcolm has done nothing except verbalize. His militancy is a matter of rhetoric. There has been no action thus far. Well, Malcolm can survive a long time on that because Malcolm happens to be a man of rather unusual abilities.
Great magnetism.
Great magnetism, charisma, whatever you want to call it. But there will come a point where Malcolm is going to have to chirp or get off the perch, where he's going to have to take some action or stop talking because the words will sound hollow. And I'm sure that he realizes this dilemma that he's facing. He's not an activist, really.
Do you think he's moving toward a political action, so political involvement, or is that an appropriate question?
Well, he says he is. He says he believes that he's trying to develop political activity within Harlem.
Quote, responsible, mature Negro politics. Mature Negro politics, as he phrased it.
He says mature Negro politics, yes. Well, here Malcolm needs to define what he means by mature Negro politics.
He defined it to me in this way when I asked him. He said, this means making our Negro representatives really responsible to us, the Negro community. If you ask how you do this except at the polls, there's no answer.
Yes. Well, this is the problem with Malcolm right now. He's trying to evolve a position. He's trying to find a platform. The old script that he had was taken away from him when he left the Nation of Islam. And now he is floating around trying to bring together a new script. And I don't know where he's coming out. I suspect that he's going to be an integrationist before long. And I think that he was trying to prepare the ground for that when he sent back those various letters and postcards from Africa. I got a couple of them here, which he indicated that his old anti-white views apparently did not hold up to the realities that he found.
Of the white member of the Mohammedan faith.
Of the Mohammedan faith. Now, I'd say on the question of leadership, too, that Whitney Young is absolutely right, that the press has been irresponsible, partly out of ignorance, I think, and sometimes, I suspect, out of a deliberate attempt to create conflict within Negro leadership and the Negro community.
You think there's really some of this deliberate divide-and-rule policy?
I think there is some of that. There's some divide-and-rule. And also the fact that a reporter wants to make it. He wants to move ahead with his paper. And this is always news. Conflict is news. Agreement is not news. But we find that on occasions, some fellow who happens to be a Negro, who makes a speech, gets the ear of a reporter, and whispers something that happens to be newsworthy at that point, finds himself overnight a Negro leader. He can't maintain that position because he has no following and he doesn't have the substance. But for the time being, he is a Negro leader.
Let's turn from that a moment to the matter of demonstrations. Now, let us say that the I know your view on the non-violent demonstration.
Yeah.
Clearly, that's clear. I'm not talking about that distinction between violent and non-violent. I'm talking about what it might be called legitimate non-violent demonstration, as opposed to what might be called illegitimate nonviolent demonstration, or you recognize a distinction of that sort. Let's take a practical case. Clearly you were opposed to Stalin.
Oh, yes.
That for some reason was illegitimate in your mind, or at least inappropriate.
Inappropriate, I would say.
I'm groping to see if there's a distinction in terms of social, general social reference between one kind of demonstration and another kind of demonstration. I'm groping for some distinction of that sort, if it exists in your mind.
Well, you see, it's difficult for you to lay down guidelines as a generalization as to what is acceptable as a demonstration and what is not acceptable. This fact was pointed up to me this morning in the New York Times, where Javits is calling upon Negro leaders to issue a statement saying the acceptable boundaries for demonstrations. Where do we stop? And what is acceptable and what isn't? I don't think it's possible to do that, because what may be acceptable in New York is not acceptable in Chicago. What may be acceptable in Plaquemine, Louisiana, is not acceptable in New York City.
Probably the other way.
Yes. And what is acceptable today, or what is not acceptable today, may be acceptable a year hence. For example, of the stall-in. I was not opposed to the stall-in on principle. I was opposed to it in tactics and timing. I considered the stall-in to be essentially a revolutionary tactic which requires a revolutionary situation, revolutionary circumstances.
Now explain that, will you please, sir?
Well, I'll try to. I would consider a stall-in, a massive stall-in, to be in the same category with a general strike, a general work stoppage. It's a revolutionary tactic, and I think that it requires certain prerequisites. It has certain prerequisites. One, unity in the Negro community. Two, an almost absolute polarization existing between the races. Neither of those things were true in the New York context at this time.
Even that would be a desperate measure.
It would be a desperate measure.
You said revolutionary measure.
Yeah. Now, in Plaquemine, Louisiana, I recommended to the Negroes, I have recommended to the Negro community there, that they explore the idea of a general strike, a work stoppage. I think here you have the total polarization. Here you have absolute unity.
Here being Plaquemine, you mean?
Plaquemine, yes. In Plaquemine. So that such an extreme measure would be justified, in my view, and would be workable. While in New York, it would be neither justifiable nor workable.
In other words, you are saying there are two questions, if I'm trying to paraphrase you to yourself, to be sure I understand what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
There is an element of a social reference involved in the matter of, in two ways. One, the social reference to the nature of this total community.
Mm-hmm.
This being illegitimate, we'll say in quotes, whatever that word may mean,
mm-hmm.
illegitimate when there is a spectrum of opinion in the overall community.
Mm-hmm.
There's no polarization, or very little polarization.
Right.
Because you do not want to violate the social structure, as it were. Neither the guy hurrying to deliver a baby.
Right.
You want to keep the services operating.
Yeah.
The second kind of social reference would be the amount of violence, which has been practiced against the Negro movement.
Yes.
Those are two kinds of social reference that are involved.
That would be true, yes.
As these are guidelines of another sort from what Mr. Javits is asking for, is that right?
I would agree, yes, in that. Also, the extent to which you have been able to get dialogue otherwise. And in New York, at least we've had dialogue. We haven't made the progress that we wanted. But I did not feel that the stall-in tactic was justified at that time.
Oscar Hanlon says that there is a danger in certain northern cities where there is a dialogue, use your word, going on,
mm-hmm.
and some gains are being made, and some proselyting being successful. In using a demonstration for what can be achieved by the dialogue, the possibility of overplaying the demonstration. Now, I assume he's talking about the two events in New York City, the stall-ins and the boycott.
Yeah.
The context of that, this passage in the book, I assume mm-hmm. he's talking about that.
Yeah.
At least he's much concerned about that question of what is the relation of demonstration to negotiation.
Well, I think that they're not contradictory at all. They're not mutually exclusive. We find that demonstrations are frequently the catalyst that gets action in negotiation, that spurs the dialogue. Sometimes demonstrations actually start the dialogue.
You can't lead except from strength.
That's right, yes, except from strength. Before the demonstrations started, and by demonstrations I mean the massive demonstrations, say, from Birmingham,
yes.
There was very little discussion, constructive discussion, Well, lots of talk, but no real action. And the talk went on interminably, and the gains were negligible. But after the demonstrations began, people recognized the urgency of it. We would not even have had a civil rights bill introduced in Congress had it not been from Birmingham.
Birmingham was a catalyst for the civil rights bill.
That's right, yes. While Birmingham movement failed in Birmingham, it succeeded elsewhere.
How much of the psychological element is involved in the value of demonstration? Simply the affirmation of identity, the affirmation of self, and of courage on the part of the Negro community in the demonstration.
Yeah.
Is that a significant factor?
I think it's a very profound point. It is indeed. I consider it to be one of the most valuable functions of demonstration, to weld a group of people together in unity, to stimulate their motivation, and to recruit. Many people will come into the movement because they see action in the street. They can see it. It's visible. They can participate in it. They can walk and get tired.
Robert Moses.
Yes, yes. Exactly.
Himself.
Of course. They can walk and get tired, then they are doing something, and they'll never be the same again.
Now, tell me this. On the other side, I read this in Louis Lomax's book, not the Black Muslim one, the other one, the early one.
The Negro Revolt.
Negro Revolt, yes. That even in Montgomery, he's puzzled by this fact that a short time after the victory there, you see, in the Montgomery Improvement Association victory, mm-hmm. that the first time there was a general state meeting, the SCLC in Birmingham, for the rally on the last night, no church was made available. Not even the one that Dr. Abernathy had previously held, and Dr. King, that excellent too. But something had happened there. Despite this victory, something had happened to the community. You know anything about that situation?
No, I don't. I didn't remember that passage from Lomax's book.
Now, wait a minute. I'm wrong. Lomax says such what's equivalent to that.
Mm-hmm.
That little was achieved in Birmingham. He's puzzled with the fact that little was achieved in Birmingham.
Yes.
No, this citation of fact is from Silberman's book.
Oh, yes, sir.
He quotes Lomax in connection as supporting evidence about that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's puzzled by it, too. Doesn't really know the answer to this.
Mm-hmm. Well,
something had happened in the Negro community there. Something had happened. Nobody knows. He doesn't know what.
Well, I suspect that one thing that had happened was some internecine warfare within the movement, and that frequently happens as you're approaching a conclusion.
Well, of course, Lomax does make a great point about the fact that they have not wanted this Dwight Walker in many communities.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes.
Dwight Walker's very funny on this question, by the way, and the tapes he made for me. He said he was perfectly right about me, but he's wrong about everybody else.
Oh, really?
He's right about me. He's in a very charming way. Then he attacked Lomax as being an irresponsible reporter in general, but said, on that point, he's right. But no, that question, what I'm getting at is this. What is the seed planted by the demonstration, the general Negro community, nationwide community or local communities? Is it psychological or is it a matter of both? A matter of practical gains, a matter of participation? What is this significance? You've already answered one thing, the psychological.
No, I think it is psychological. I think it's organizational too, and that it helps to recruit. Mm-hmm. It helps to build a movement. We've found that we have to have demonstrations if we are building a movement. They're absolutely necessary.
You can't build them on paper.
You can't build them on paper, nor can we build a movement on negotiations. Mm-hmm. And this poses a dilemma for us. Very often, our campaigns are successful in the negotiation stage. And then you find you lose your momentum, and you find another issue, and it becomes all the more difficult to regain the momentum and take action. That's why it is hard for the civil rights movement, or any part of it, to call off demonstrations which have been planned. It's extremely difficult to do that. We have called them off. We do it because we think it's necessary to do it sometimes if their progress is being made in negotiations. but who recognize we may be killing the movement. Mm-hmm. In North Carolina, negotiations got underway. This is summer before last. We even talked with the governor, and he made certain promises and set up committees. On the basis of this, we called off demonstrations, held them in abeyance. The governor's committees were unsuccessful. They gave a progress report after we were insistent upon it. The progress report was no progress. Well, we had lost momentum, we had lost all the steam, and it took us another year to get things organized again. This time we didn't make the same mistake. So I think we have to have demonstrations. We have to be flexible, have to be prepared to call them off at times. But when you call them off, we have learned that we have to have some other action for the people to get involved in immediately.
Now, what about this distinction? This is, you're getting at it, but I want to try to get it clear in my mind, if possible. Demonstrations with a target.
Oh, yes.
You see, and demonstrations is mere expression.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's at least a logical distinction there, isn't there?
Yes, there's a distinction, a very important distinction. I think under certain circumstances, both are valid. Demonstration as a protest is a valid thing.
That's without target.
Yes, without a target. Without a target. Just protest against segregation. As many of the marches in the South, the marches in Birmingham, the marches in Albany, and that sort of thing, the targets were not specific there. This was a protest against segregation, a demand for freedom now, which is a slogan and not a program, of course. I think it had validity. I believe that it's more valid and more meaningful, however, to have specific targets that are picked out with accuracy and the action tailored to achieve the objective which you have in mind.
Now, in that case, when you have a target,
yes,
that means that you can have also leadership control more easily manipulated.
Yes, that's right. And also you have a chance of winning a victory. And victories are important now. The reason the civil rights revolution is in trouble is because victories have been too few in the past year.
Now, are you following the same line of thought that Whitney Young follows there?
How is that?
We must have victories in order to maintain responsible control.
Well, I would say to maintain direction, we would say control. I don't think we've ever had control, really.
Well, I don't think, he said to maintain responsible leadership, I think he said.
Yeah. Well, my only argument with Whitney on this is the meaning of responsible.
Well, let's go into that.
Yeah. You see, I've been accused sometimes of being irresponsible. Other times I've been accused, and I'll use the same word, of being responsible. Because of the current civil rights context, it is an accusation to tell a Negro leader he is a responsible person. Because this means then that he is alienated, or there is a gap between him and the people he is supposedly leading. It becomes a kiss of death.
You mean the word responsible
is
the way means he's under Tom.
Yes, to put it bluntly, that's what it means. Usually we consider a person responsible who agrees with us or who is not militant.
If a white press calls a Negro leader responsible, he's calling him Uncle Tom in the eyes of
the Negro vernacular, of that
same piece of paper, same newspaper.
Yeah, I don't want any reporter to call me responsible or to call me a moderating influence, as some have. I deny that. As militant as the next.
Well, your methods are different.
Yes.
You're stuck with that, aren't you?
Of course I'm stuck with it.
Now, this is back to you and Dr. King and some others. The notion that Dr. Kenneth Clark, the one, has analyzed, that this, the nonviolent, the Gandhian, Christian, Thoreauvian approach, means that the white man is lulled to a sense of security. If he doesn't get shot in the back and retaliation, he says, okay, we don't have to do very much.
Well, I don't think this is true at all. I discussed it with Ken Clark. I don't agree with Ken Clark on that. I don't think that nonviolence in its classical sense or in its practical sense as used in this country can lull anybody to sleep. Look at what happened to Woolworth in 1960 during the student sit-ins. There was a nationwide boycott, which is a classical nonviolent direct action technique. Woolworth admitted in its annual report to its stockholders that profits had gone down in the year 1960. It doesn't mean they lost money, but it means that the curve of profits went down. And they gave as one of the three reasons for that drop in profits a nationwide boycott against their stores. I don't think anybody's going to be lulled into a sense of security while he's losing money. Many people would rather have you hit them over the head than hit them over the pocketbook.
James Baldwin and others report that the Southern mob does not represent the majority will of the South. That's the phrase that they fill a moral vacuum, is the phrase that Baldwin uses, and others repeat this in various.
Well, I would, in general terms, agree with that. I'm inclined to think that what exists is a continuum, really, with a few persons at both poles and the great mass of opinion in the South, as in the North, for that matter, being somewhere in the middle, various places on the scale. And I think that the mob, the violent mob, represents one extreme, which has the sympathy, either varying degrees of activeness or passiveness, of a large part of the population generally.
It's permitted anyway.
It's permitted, yeah. And sometimes it's permitted, it's winked at, and sometimes tacitly supported.
According to some commentators, analysts, the whole Negro movement is based on a crisis in the discovery of identity. History, personality, identity, my relation as Negro to the world around me, my definition of myself. You know, of course, I've read this, things like this 1,000 times.
Yes.
I want to say what you think of the proposition. There's a similar crisis of identity for the Southerner. That's the things underlie segregation, or the opposition to desegregation. That the Southerner feels it to be himself, to be a Southerner, he must support a certain definition of his role, have his identity.
Uh-huh.
Now, if he's ignorant, he sees segregation as part of that definition himself.
Uh-huh.
That he's also having a crisis of identity, his relationship to America and the human race is involved.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
It's a real crisis of his identity. That's why it's so fundamentally difficult for many Southerners to cross that line.
Uh-huh.
They feel they're selling out some piety.
Yeah.
And also setting up the self in some way. Does this make sense to you?
I think it makes a great deal of sense. I hadn't thought of it in exactly those terms.
Well, I'm a Southerner, so it kind of comes from the side of the people who are stuck with that.
Yeah. I think it makes a great deal of sense indeed. I don't think it's the whole answer.
No, there's even economic elements involved.
Yes, of course there are economic elements. Then there are problems, maybe this is a part of this struggle for identity of the Southerner that you were talking about, that the poorer Southerners have a psychological need to feel superior to somebody. It happens to be the Negro.
It happens to be the Negro.
Yes.
It's between them and the bare black ground.
That's right. Somebody told me a story of a mythical city, a hypothetical city, rather, that had voted to move Negroes out of town. All the Negroes were to be removed from the city. And a reporter saw a white woman standing on a corner crying. They said, "Why are you crying?" She said, "They're going to move all the niggers out of town." Said, "Do you like niggers?" She said, "No, I hate them." "Well, then why are you crying?" She said, "But who am I going to be better than?"
That's the old story.
Yes, I think it is.
Admitted by many.
One sees it particularly in a state like Mississippi, to go back to Mississippi again, where poverty is so deep among white as well as among Negro. And generally, one finds greater anti-Negro sentiment among the poorer whites, who have nothing to be proud of except their skin color.
Charles Evers and many other people, including Miss Lucy Thornton of Howard, the law student I referred to earlier,
yes,
have said they had hopes of a settlement in the South, even Mississippi, says Charles Evers, before and more elsewhere, and a more fundamental settlement. Mr. Evers says that the staunch segregationists, to use his phrase, at least is raised in some primitive code of respect for courage. He's having to face now for the first time straight, simple, raw courage on the part of a number of Negroes. He may not like it, but he respects it. This gives a basis for communication, or will give, he says. Another thing he says, this man, if he talks to you to negotiate, he's crossed the line already inside himself and he won't lie to you. He bases his hopes on that.
Frankly, I think he's being naive.
There. Tell me about it.
I think he's being extremely naive. Well, first of all, negotiations have been going on in the South for many, many years, ever since slavery. The negotiations were temporarily broken off about 1954, at the time of the Supreme Court decision. The issue, the question was not negotiation or communication. The question was the agenda. And the fact is the agenda has changed now. Heretofore, the agenda was moderating segregation or making it more acceptable, more humane.
Isn't that the pattern of all revolutionary movements? You move from the Kerensky to the moment to the unveiling of the real issues?
Yes, I think it is. I think that that is what has happened here. Now, as to whether the Southern white man has gained a great respect for Negroes because of their courage, I'm inclined to doubt it now.
You really are?
I'm inclined to doubt it. I think that this was true in 1960, that many people changed their image then when they saw the student sit-ins.
You think they've changed image back now to the early image?
No, I just don't think that it has moved any further in that direction. I think the student sit-ins did a great deal to shake up the image. Even a Southerner such as Kilpatrick, editor of Richmond News Leader, had a much quoted editorial at that point, pointing out there was almost a switching of stereotypes. The well-dressed Negro college students sitting there reading Goethe, while the mob outside, leather-jacketed, duck-tail haircut, boys swearing and grinning sillily, waiting for them. But I think that with the mass demonstrations of Negroes, you have not seen any noticeable change in the respect that whites have had for them.
Well, I'm thinking merely, I guess, of what my limited observation with Southerners I know, and some Northerners too.
Mm-hmm.
So far as you have your own little poll taking,
mm-hmm.
It's been effective.
You think it has been effective?
Well, how do I know? I mean, now 50 people I can say I have felt something about like this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how this stacks up. These are pre-selected, too, by just by way of life.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask a question different from that. The Negro stereotype of the white man. You talk about the inversion of the stereotype of the Negro in certain quarters.
Yes.
What about the Negro stereotype of the white man? What was it to begin with, and what is it now? What was it 15 years ago?
Well,
it probably had contradictions as the white man to the Negro.
Of course there were contradictions, yes. But let's look at the South. And
you
know how difficult it is to generalize any place. But in many communities in the South, Negroes felt that there were good white people, that there was this paternalism which was accepted. Now this is changing. I look at Plaquemine, Louisiana, and after the massive police brutality of the tear gases, the cattle prods, and the horses that trample people, saying in the Negro community then was, the only good white man is a dead one. Said, did you know that old Mrs. Johnson's boy was riding one of those horses with a cattle prod? I always thought he was a good white man. And here he was hitting Negroes over the head with sticks and sticking them with cattle prods and riding the horses. So I think that the Negro image of the white in the South has hardened.
In general?
I think in general.
You think it's getting around, of course.
Yeah. This has run parallel with the development, the rising of the nationalist sentiment of the Negro community.
Mm-hmm. Think only in the South, or is that applicable all over?
I think to some extent it's applicable all over, but it's more sharply seen in the South.
In Cleveland, I'm told, it's very sharp.
Yeah.
This is Miss Turner.
She's the first.
I talked an afternoon with her. She said this.
Yeah.
This polarization is almost absolute then.
Is that so? This is very interesting. This is one reason that CORE feels it very important to have white staff members as well as Negro staff members. Now, in Plaquemine, Louisiana, again, after the polarization became complete and Negroes thought that all whites were against them, I made it a point to call my office and have them send in some of our white field secretaries to work with the Negro community.
In Plaquemine?
In Plaquemine, yes. And it tended to work. Well, it worked in a way, in a subtle way. Say that they accepted these persons.